Her legs had begun to hurt after the hours on the train, the crash, the fall. The woman, even with a baby, had longer legs and took longer steps. She had fallen behind, and by the time she got to the village, it was gone. Already, roofs had collapsed. What walls remained were broken and cantways. Smoke blew across streets littered with stones and trash and tree limbs and piles of old clothes. She could not classify the noises, except that they scared her. They tangled in her mind with her father's voice scolding her. She wasn't supposed to be so close to whatever made those noises. Blinded by stinging smoke, she had stumbled over one of the heaps of old clothes, and only then recognized it as a person. The child she had been had thought it a silly place for someone to go to sleep, a grown woman, and she had shaken the slack, heavy arm trying to wake an adult to help her find her way. She had not seen death before, not human death. She had not been allowed to see her mother because of the fever, and it took her a long time to realize that the woman with no face would never pick her up and soothe her and promise that everything would be all right soon. She had looked around, blinking against the stinging in her eyes that was not all smoke, and saw the other piles of clothes, the other people, the dead, and the dying, whose cries she could now recognize. Even across the years, she remembered that the first thought she could recognize was an apology.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
That day, she had stumbled along the broken lane, falling again and again, crying without realizing it, until her legs gave out and she huddled into the corner of a wall where someone's garden had once held bright flowers. Shadowy figures moved through the smoke, some wearing one color and some another. Most, she knew later, must have been the terrified passengers on the train. Some were rebels. Later, they all wore the same uniform, the uniform she knew, the one her father and uncles wore. But Esme didn't remember. She couldn't remember, not all of it. She had remembered, and they'd said it was dreams.
It would have been better, I always thought, if they'd told you. At least when you got old enough. Being as the man was dead and couldn't hurt anyone again, least of all you. Bad enough for it to happen at all, no matter who did it. The rape of a child. Sickening. But to have it be one of ours.
Esme fixed on the one thing she could stand to know.
I didn't know he was dead.
Well, your father couldn't tell you that without bringing up the rest of it, could he? He hoped you'd forget the whole thing, or think it was just a fever dream.
He'd said it was a fever dream. He'd said it was over now, that she'd always be safe. He'd said he wasn't angry at her. Yet his anger had hovered around her, a vast cloud, dangerous, blinding her mind as the smoke had blinded her eyes.
You're sure?
That the bastard died? Oh, yes. I have no doubt at all.
You killed him?
It was that or your father's career. Officers can't just kill their men, even animals who rape children. But to wait, to charge him, that would have brought you into it, and none of us wanted that. Better for me to do it and take my lumps. Not that there was anything worse than a stiff chewing out at the end of it. Extenuating circumstances.
I'm glad to know that.
I always said you should have been told. Not that I talked about it, you understand. I said it to myself, I mean. It was no use arguing with your father. And after all, you were his daughter.
Don't worry about it.
Esme was finding it hard to pay attention. She felt the room drifting slowly away, on a slow spiral to the left.
And you're sure you got it all sorted out? All but him being dead, I mean. They helped you in the RSS.
I'm fine. Don't worry about it.
No, I was surprised, you know, when you wanted to go off planet and join them. Figured you'd had enough combat for any one life. But I guess it's your blood coming out, eh?
How do I get rid of him politely and discreetly?
Esme could hardly tell him to go away. She had a headache. Suiza's did not treat guests that way. But she needed, how she needed, some hours alone.
Esmea?
Esme looked up. Her half-brother Germond grinned shyly at her.
Father said, would you come to the conservatory, please? If you can excuse her, sir?
Of course. It's your family's turn now. As mayor, thank you for your time.
Coron bowed, very formal again at the end, and withdrew. Esme turned to Germond, now 15, all ears and nose and big feet.
What did Father want?
He's in the conservatory with Uncle Bertol. He said you'd be getting tired of listening to old soldiers' tales, for one thing, and for another, he wanted to ask you more about Fleet.
Tell him Seb's gone, and I'll be out in a few minutes. I've gone upstairs to freshen up.
For once, the impenetrable assumptions of Altiplano society worked in her favor. No male would question her need to be alone for a few minutes with an array of plumbing fixtures, nor would they rush her. Esme went up the stairs by instinct. She was not seeing the brass rails holding the carpet snug to the risers, the scuffs on the steps themselves. Her body knew how to get up the stairs, around the corners, where to find the switches that gave her absolute privacy. She leaned against the wall, turned on the cold water tap, and put her hands into it. She wasn't sure why. She wasn't sure of anything, including the passage of time. The water cut off automatically, just as it would aboard ship, and she nudged the controls again. The curdled remains of lunch slopped into the clean swirl of water and disappeared down the drain with it. Esme cupped her hand under the faucet and drank a handful of the cold, sweet water. Her stomach lurched, but steadied. She had never been prone to nausea. Not even then. Not even when the pain was so bad she'd been sure she was being torn apart. The real pain, not the imagined pain induced by fever dreams. In the mirror, she looked like a stranger. A gaunt old woman with flyaway dark hair, face streaked with tears and vomit. This would never do. Methodically, Esme took a towel from the rack, wet it, and cleaned her face and hands. She rubbed her face hard with the dry end of the towel until the blood returned and the greenish tinge of nausea disappeared under a healthy pink. She attacked her hair with damp hands, flattening the loose strands, then dried her hands. The water stopped again, and this time she didn't turn it back on. She folded the damp towel and hung it on the used rack. The woman in the mirror now looked more familiar. Esme forced a smile, and it looked more natural on that face than it felt on her own.
I should put on something.
She looked to see if she'd spotted her shirt. A few drops showed, dark against the pale fawn.
I'll change into someone else.
Her mind stumbled over something in the smoke that was all she could see. Still navigating by habit, she unlocked the door and returned to her own room. By the time she'd taken off the shirt, she knew she'd have to change from the skin out. She did that as quickly as she could, taking what lay on top in her drawers and glancing at herself only long enough to be sure the wide collar lay flat and untwisted around her neck. The pallor had gone. She looked like Esme Suiza again. Esme fought her way through the choking dark clouds in her mind, trying to cling to what she remembered, what Seb Coron had told her. To any logic that could connect them. When the smoke cloud in her mind cleared, the first thing she recognized was smug relief. She had been right. She had known the truth. She had made no mistakes, except for the stupidity of leaving home in the first place, the idiocy of a child trying to travel cross-country in the midst of a civil war. She batted that critical voice down. She had been a child. Children were, by definition, ignorant of some things. In the essentials, in recognizing what she had seen, in telling the truth about what happened, she had been right. Rage followed that moment of delight. She had been right, and they had lied to her. They had told her she was mistaken, that she was confused by the fever.
Was there even a fever?
Esme started to call up the household medical records before her critical voice pointed out that of course the records would show such an illness, such a hospitalization. It could have been fabricated, all of it. How would she know? And to whom did she want to prove it? To everyone at that moment. She wanted to drag the truth before her father, her uncle, even Papa Stefan. She wanted to grab them by the neck, force them to see what she had seen, feel what she had felt, admit that she had in fact endured what she had endured. But they already knew. They knew, and yet they had lied to her. She could keep her own secret and let them think theirs safe, run away again as she had run before. They would be comfortable still, indulged by her complicity. Or she could confront them. She looked again in the mirror. That was the person she would become if she became an admiral like Harris Serrano's aunt. The diffidence, the uncertainty that had mocked her so often had burned away in the last hour. She did not yet feel what she saw in that face, but she trusted the eyes that blazed out at her.
Is he still in the conservatory? How long did this take?
The clock surprised her. She had been upstairs only half a local hour. She headed for the conservatory, this time with all senses fully awake. It might have been the first time she came down the stairs. She felt a slight give in the sixth from the bottom, noticed a loose tack on the railing side of the carpet, spotted a nick in the railing itself. Every sight, every smell, every sound.